Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're now listening to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Now, last month, Malaysia saw a mere 141 cars sold, a 99% drop from March, which isn't great for showrooms, but could mean better prices for consumers if showrooms cut prices to make sales. On top of that, we've seen interest rates come down to stimulate the economy and borrowing. So with all this in mind, could this be a good time to buy a car? To help me explore this, I have on the line with me Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts and licensed financial planner with Principal Asset Management. Joyce, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Roshan. I'm glad to be back.
So Joyce, is it a good time to buy a car with interest rates coming down and talk about good car deals as showrooms try to make up sales? Is this something I should be looking at this year?
When there are bargains, it's always good to actually go and look for a big ticket item like a car. That is only on the basis that you have planned for it and that your cash flow can accept a new commitment every month. Now, if you have not planned for it, just because the car rates, higher purchase rates have come down, it may not be something that you want to do and add more stress to already stressed financial situation. So yes, if you have planned for it, by all means, this is a perfect time to go shopping for a car loan.
So by plan for it, I assume you mean that I've got my cash flow sorted out comfortably. I've got my cash reserves as well. And that overall, my financial situation is comfortable so that if I added a car loan in there, it doesn't stress my personal finances.
Absolutely, on the dot, yes.
So if I've got all that sorted out, let's say I didn't plan for a car last year, but now as interest rates have come down, I'm thinking maybe I could see a good deal in the market when it comes to cars. And I do have some room in my system. Even though I didn't plan it last year, is it okay to start planning for it now?
Yes, you can, especially if you want to downgrade. Because if, in times like this, it's possibly not a good time to upgrade. So you might want to get a newer car that doesn't cost you so much repairs. And if you have an old car that you're still paying at a higher, maybe 50, 70 or even 100 basis points higher, you might want to just, get a buyer and do the, sell it to somebody who can give you a good price and then get a new car. And so if you have not planned for it, but, your car is actually burning a hole in your pocket because of repairs or because the difference between your old higher purchase rate and now gives you the benefit of downgrading or changing to a similar car, then yes, by all means.
So when it comes to getting a loan for a car, what are the key things I need to pay attention to then?
It's important to look at the APR, the average percentage rate. I think for the many individuals I've spoken to, some are not aware that the interest rate, the flat interest rate is not the same as the variable interest rate. Flat interest rate is whereby you are charged on the principal of your loan on a flat basis, no matter how much you have paid it down. So if you've taken the 40,000 loan at 2.5, your 2.5 will be charged on 40,000 and multiplied by the number of years. Now, in order to get a comparison with your normal mortgage rates, you need to change it to what you call an average percentage rate or an effective rate. Now, effectively, just a rule of thumb, you probably just multiply by 1.9, not double. It doesn't really double. So if you have a 2.5% loan, depending on your tenure, you will have about 4.7%. So that's about 90% more, not double. That's one.
And what does that 4.7% indicate?
4.7 is the effective interest rate. So if you were to compare that with, say, your mortgage and you're paying, say, 4.2, so what is more, which is a more expensive loan, which, you have to look at it from a apple-to-apple comparison, then yes, your higher purchase loan is more expensive. So when you get 2.5, it doesn't mean your higher purchase is lower than your mortgage. You have to change it to an effective rate so that you make a true orange to orange, apple to apple comparison.
Right. And this is because the interest rate is paid on the amount that you borrowed throughout the tenure of the loan, correct?
Yes, for higher purchase, if it's a flat rate. But if it's a variable one, which nowadays they have a variable hire purchase loan, whereby you only pay based on the interest, on the principal that's outstanding. It's just like a mortgage loan. And if you actually tie it to an account where you can even put in money and reduce the loan, just like a mortgage account, then you pay less interest. So that's how it works. But traditionally, it's always been a flat rate hire purchase loan, which is you pay the whole interest on the original principal.
So Joyce, we've covered one is the rate. So whether it's the rate that you, the sticker rate or the annualized, the effective rate, whether you look at flat or variable, and also the tenure of the loan, right? That's very important because if you look at something like a flat rate and if you do a 7-year loan, you're on 2.5%, you're paying 2.5 times 7, right, essentially.
2.5 years times 7. Now, however, having said that, Roshan, when I look at my own hire purchase rate that, you know, when I'm about to take it, I usually will change it to an APR, which is the average percentage rate. And depending on the loan amount and the tenure and the rate, of course, then you find that a 6-year or a 7-year or even a 9-year, not a 6-year, 7-year or a 9-year loan would have a lower APR. But you would have paid up a more interest for sure because you multiply it by the number of years. But if you annualize it and make and change it to an effective APR rate, you will find that you get a lower APR, slightly lower APR versus a shorter tenure.
So what is your opinion on the matter? Should I go for a shorter loan or a longer loan to get that lower APR?
The car repayment is a commitment every month. So first up is to know, to ask yourself whether if you take a 5-year loan, will it stress your finances every month? It will mean that you have to cough up more each month. Now, if you actually spread it over 9 years or 7 years, then is it easier on your finances? If it is, then take that. The second thing is for a person like me, I like to have the lowest APR. And so in between taking a 5-year loan and a 9-year loan, I usually take a 7-year loan because I have a lower APR, plus it spreads out the cash flow. And the other thing is, what am I doing with the extra cash that I have had I taken a 5-year loan? I invest it or put it somewhere where it can actually work better than my APR of, say, 4.7. So if I just put it in a conservative portfolio, I probably get 5-6. Then that's the difference that I get by putting money through a loan, less money in a loan and more money in a growth account. And I think, Roshan, the other thing about your question, you know, what else must you look at is to ask yourself whether are you going to, you know, when you get a higher purchase loan, especially a flat rate one, are you going to do an early settlement? I have people who, you know, get a loan and then later they do an early settlement because they have extra money. And if you're really going to do that, maybe you should like to consider a variable loan. Because paying early in a flat rate loan would there will be a higher penalty for you versus a variable higher purchase loan.
And now just circling back to the point about investing, Joyce, of course, when it comes to investing, returns aren't guaranteed. So just keep that in mind. And on that note, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll be talking about should you buy a car in cash and whether you should be looking at rental, subscription or e-hailing services. You're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking to Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts, and we're talking about cars today. Earlier, we were talking about the things to consider when you're getting a higher purchase loan for a car. But what if you don't want to take up a car loan and buy a car in cash? Now, Joyce, let's say you already have a separate emergency cash buffer to cover expenses for 6 months. Should I consider buying a car in cash so that I don't pay any interest on that purchase?
Mm. Interests are not necessarily bad. It's only bad if you are not doing anything with the money that you would have used it for the car, right? So it's a cost-benefit equation again, as I've always mentioned. So if you've got your emergency money of 6 months, that's actually minimum. You probably sometimes, depending on your situation, you might need more. However, if that is in place, if you buy a car in cash, that's provided you have no other means of using that money. You know, I mean, that cash could probably be put into, if you have a credit card loan, you're clearing a more expensive loan, or it could be put away into a portfolio that gives you more than your average percentage rate, which is your effective rate of 4.5-4.7%. So paying in cash is only dependent if you have nothing else for that cash, nothing else to be used for that cash that will give you a higher benefit than paying into a depreciating asset like car.
Right. So when it comes to something like that, I guess we use the APR, the effective rate, as a comparison to other things that we would do with the money in terms of getting a rate of return. Am I correct there?
Yes. So knowing how to calculate APR or checking into your agreement, but how many people actually look into the agreement to check whether everything's all right, because that's important, then yeah, that's important to know. How do you know what is your effective rate for your hire purchase car loan that's flat?
So if, let's say, we use a 2.5% rate, as we talked about earlier, your effective rate comes up to about 4.7. So basically, anything that you get above 4.7 or 4.8% is a better use of your money, from theoretically speaking?
Absolutely, you're in the money. So if you're putting it in ASB, it gives you about 6-7%. You're already in the money. Even if you're having a portfolio that gives you 5, which is possibly a bond portfolio, not an FD. If you're putting your money in FD, then yes, by all means, please pay it off. You know, your money is not being stretched. But if it's, you're getting at least 5, which is higher, 20, 30 basis points higher, then yes, by all means. I mean, I'm just looking at 4.7. We were talking about APRs just now. If you have a higher number of years, your APR goes to about 4.6.
All right, Joy. So we've covered a bit of about how a hire purchase loan works and the criteria to pay attention to. Basically, when it comes to whether you should buy a car in cash, it comes down to really whether you could use your money better, whether it's investing it or paying off more expensive debts. Now, let's expand the conversation a little bit more. I've heard that if you get a hire purchase loan, one of the reasons to opt for a loan instead of buying a car in cash is that it helps with your credit score, especially for someone who doesn't have a credit card or any other form of loan. And essentially, when you don't have any form of credit card payments or any loan, you have no credit score, which is also not great.
True. That's a valid point, Roshan. Because if you don't have, if no credit history on your CCRIS, bankers will not be able to assess your credibility as a borrower. So yes, a car loan would be quite, I would say, a low entry, lower rate than a credit card loan to get a credit score. Yes, that's a very valid point, Roshan. Yes, I would definitely agree with that.
So just let's just change the topic a little bit now and stop talking about buying a car and about renting or subscribing to a car service, as some have popped up in Malaysia right now. What are your thoughts on this as a way of getting a car?
These are very interesting plans, and it's very suitable for those who want to switch cars every 2 or 3 years, and also for those who like to be carefree about owning a car, maybe because they have unsure plans in between relocation, in between careers, or maybe they're expecting a company car. So they just, or going overseas for studies, they just want a car for 1-2 years. It makes sense for those who have no lump sum cash deposit, because if you're getting a higher purchase, you got to cough up about 10%. Here you get you just put in a deposit, which is refundable. But of course, there are some cons, you know, where you know, it's just short term. It's not 9 years, the most maybe 2 years or three. And then there's a mileage cap as far as this is concerned, which you then have to top up more if you actually exceed that mileage, depending on what plans you take. So yeah, I like that kind of subscription level, because I myself would have taken it because, you know, earlier in my years, I was going for my further studies, for my master's, and I didn't want to buy a car. So I resorted to, you know, public transport. But if there was such a thing at that point in time, I just needed a car for 1 year, I would have done it.
So essentially, it's a short-term solution, or if you're someone who changes your car every 2 to 3 years. But if you're someone who maybe doesn't change your car very often, maybe 5 years or more, or 4 years or more, it may be more worthwhile to buy a vehicle instead. Am I correct in saying that?
That's right, because with a higher purchase loan, you get to stretch your higher purchase repayments over 7-9 years, that sort of thing. Vis-a-vis a subscription, you have to cough up quite a bit. I mean, in terms of subscription, depending on what car, you're actually paying more than, a 9-year higher purchase repayment, right? So for that short period, you would have come out with quite a bit of subscription fee per month. However, the subscription fee, if you're a business, you're having a business concern on a tax basis, you can also use it as a deductible. You know, so that those are some advantages that you can look at. But on a financial planning basis, whether it's viable, it depends on which plan or model you're using. Because if you get a car that's higher in terms of, say, it's more than 100,000 value car, you find that its depreciation is higher on that kind of car, and you have to pay more insurance on your own and road tax. So if you were to subscribe it via these plans, it is more viable on a financial basis. I mean, if you look at the number crunching, you find that, you know, it is to your advantage when you subscribe using this car. The only thing is you have to give it up in the 2 to 3 years. But you can change it for another one, upgrade, or you just use it for that period and you just go to a normal higher purchase loan. So a higher, a more expensive car will mean that it's more viable simply because of the depreciation that you're not taking on during the tenure.
All right, Joyce, another option that we have nowadays is ride hailing, especially now that we're working from home more. This may seem more viable, but what are your thoughts on that? Is it a good option to live on Grab as a mode of transportation?
Actually, I did some calculations, Roshan, based on my own experiences where I take ride hailing during peak hour, non-peak hours. And I find that if you do that every day, it doesn't stack up well against if you own a car. Because you have rush hour, what you call surcharge, and you may not get the particular ride hailing service immediately. Plus, I have an elderly mom, and I need to make sure that, you know, that the car is suitable to put in the wheelchair, or if you have a baby, to put in a stroller. So it's not that convenient. And when you want it, when you need it, you know, at an emergency, say you have to go to the hospital, then, you know, it's not. You're not sure that you have a car that you can use. So on a financial analysis basis, it's actually more expensive. It is only good if you were to go to work using this ride hailing every day, it's more expensive than if you were to own a car and then you can spread the higher purchase over nine years. Rates are low. So unless you have... I think a few circumstances where ride hailing is good for you. If you're looking at short distances, or you are single, you have no babies and elderlies to make sure that they're comfortable and, you know, put in the strollers or the wheelchair. It's also good if you combine it with public transportation. And say you work in a place where you have to pay high daily parking fees or monthly parking fees, then you might want to just consider. And consider taking ride hailing, provided the distance between your home and your work is not that far, because the further you are from your home and your workplace, you actually pay more ride hailing fees. And if you're the type of person who's always in a rush and money is really, every second is time for you because, you know, you're in a business or you have to actually keep closing deals, perhaps it makes sense to actually to take grab hailing, because then you save your time from finding car parks, which can be actually such a headache and time consuming, or you're just not confident driving in KL. So financially wise, it's not viable if you do this every day. Only if it's short distances in combination with public transportation.
And on that note, Joyce, thank you so much for joining me on the line today.
Thank you for having me, Roshan, as always.
I was speaking to Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts, and this was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Karnason for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.